Good morning. This is Eileen with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, November 15th, 2016. We'll begin with the first headline article, ADM Carbon Storage Plant Under EPA Review by Chris Lasvardi. In Decatur, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is accepting comments about plans to modify a permit for an Archer Daniels Midland Company injection well to store carbon dioxide underground. The existing permit is for one well that ADM wants to use to inject and store carbon dioxide and its ethanol plant in its ethanol plant in Decatur as part of the Industrial Carbon Capture and Storage Project. The company intends to place 1.1 million metric tons of carbon dioxide into the well over 5 years. The well was constructed in 2015 along with required pre-operational testing. Pending approval, it could be in service next year as ADM's goal is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and reduce climate change. The proposed modifications will update the permit, which was issued in 2014 and was with new information obtained during well construction and pre-injection testing. The EPA said only the conditions proposed for modifications are reopened for comment. EPA regulates the injection of fluids through wells as part of the Safe Drinking Water Act to protect the quality of underground sources of water. ADM officials have said the groundwater is protected in large part due to the thousands of feet in between the water levels and the storage level. The carbon is stored 7,000 feet below ground in the Mount Simon sandstone. The comment period, which started last week, will continue through Wednesday, December 14th. A public hearing is scheduled for 6 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, December 13th at the Decatur Public Library, 130 North Franklin Street. At the hearing, oral and written comments will be recorded, as the EPA said it will provide a summary of its proposal, but will not answer questions at that time. A detailed list of the proposed modifications is available on the EPA's website, https://go.usa.gov/3JWFP at the library or by contacting the EPA. The agency said proposed modifications are related to the size of the area of review surrounding ADM to be examined to ensure the protection of underground sources of drinking water, final injection and monitoring of the well construction, injection startup procedures, and other administrative edits for clarity. Comments can be submitted to Andrew Greenhagen, U.S. EPA Water Division, UIC Branch, 77 West Jackson Boulevard, Chicago, 60604-3590. His email is Greenhagen, that's GREENHAGEN, dot Andrew, at EPA.gov, or call 312-353-7648. The EPA plans to consider all comments received and then issue a final decision along with a response to any of what is considered significant comments. The right to appeal any final permit decision is reserved for those participating in the hearing or submitting written comments by the end of the period. The next article, Computer Savvy Teens Start Troubleshooting Business, by Valerie Wells in Moquegua. Lucas Lower came up with a slogan for the computer and electronics repair company he started with his childhood buddy Tyler Martin. If it plugs into a wall, give us a call, Lucas said, laughing a little with Martin. The two Central A&M High School seniors have been teased a bit about the slogan, Lower said. One teacher suggested the men should look at his refrigerator for him because it plugs into the wall. Of course, they don't work on refrigerators. What Airwave Consulting does is troubleshooting electronics, from replacing cracked cell phone screens to fixing tablets, laptops, and desktop computers, whether the problem is big or small. Their office is Lucas's bedroom at his parents' home in Moquegua. His sister moved to college, so he moved his bedroom into her room and turned his former bedroom into their workplace. When I was a kid, we used to take our computers to this guy in town named Russell Feathers, he said. He recently got out of business, and seeing how we have the knowledge for that type of thing, we said, hey, why don't we give it a shot and see what happens? They created a website and ordered business cards and posted it on the Moquegua Friends Facebook page, and customers have been coming ever since. They both also work at Moquegua Golf Course. We do a little bit of everything, Tyler said. They build websites as well as fix electronics, and building a website for Dee Davis and Son in Moquegua was one of their first jobs, thanks to their principal's recommendation to the owners. One of our main goals is not to be super expensive, Lucas said. You go to places and they quote you thousands of dollars for something. We enjoy doing it, and we don't want to charge a lot of money. Our main goal is to make it affordable. Both of them have been interested in computers since childhood. Lucas's parents let him tinker with old computers when they replaced them with upgraded versions, and he learned how to build one from parts. Other kids were into sports and stuff, and we were into the tech side, he said. I really like seeing how it all works. I guess now we're interested in helping people and sharing our knowledge with them. But both would like to keep their hand in the tech industry, but on a part-time basis, as they have other plans for careers. Lucas is planning to attend Eastern Illinois University to become a math teacher, while Tyler is hoping to become an apprentice with an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. When Lucas goes to Charleston for college, Tyler can keep their business going, and his partner will help during school breaks. It's always cool to make something that's a hobby, and that is, and turn it into something you can make money from, and help people out too, Lucas says. The next headline article is a national one. Feds seek more pipeline study before OK. And this is from Bismarck, North Dakota. It's by James McPherson and Blake Nicholson from the Associated Press. The Army Corps of Engineers on Monday said it has finished a review of the disputed Dakota Access Pipeline, but wants more study and tribal input before seeing whether to allow it to cross under the Missouri River Reservoir in North Dakota. The announcement, which came amid speculation that federal officials were on the brink of green-lighting the crossing, spells further delay for the project. Dallas-based Energy Transfer Partners, the company developing the pipeline, said earlier Monday that it expected to be moving oil through the pipeline by early next week if it received permission. The Corps in July granted the company the permits needed for the project, but in September said more analysis was warranted in the wake of the American Indian concerns. The Standing Rock Sioux, whose reservation will be skirted by the $3.8 billion four-state pipeline, says it threatens its drinking water and cultural sites. Energy Transfer Partners disputes that and said last week it's preparing to bore under the river. Army Assistant Secretary Joe Allen Darcy said in a letter to company officials and tribal chairman Dave Archambault that additional discussion with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and analysis are warranted. That discussion is to include potential conditions on the easement for the pipeline crossing that would reduce a risk of a spill. Darcy said the Army will work with the tribe on a timeline that allows for robust discussion and analysis to be completed expeditiously. Army spokeswoman Mariah Kelly would not elaborate on whether the discussion would be by the time President Barack Obama leaves office. Donald Trump, a pipeline supporter, is set to take office in January. Archambault and Energy Transfer Partners spokeswoman Vicky Granata did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The 1,200-mile pipeline is to carry North Dakota oil through South Dakota and Iowa to a shipping point in Illinois. The company building the $3.8 billion Dakota Access Oil Pipeline said before the Army announcement Monday that it expects to finish construction by December 1st, except for a small disputed section in North Dakota, and could begin moving crude early next year if the government gives final approval. In an email to the Associated Press, Energy Transfer Partners said it would finish the pipeline within 120 days of getting approval for the easement beneath the Lake O, the Missouri River Reservoir in southern North Dakota. Also Monday, officials locked down the North Dakota Capitol after pipeline opponents gathered there, one day before a group plans more than 200 protests at the Army Corps of Engineers offices and other sites across the country. Nearly 470 protesters have been arrested since August supporting the Standing Rock Sioux. Energy Transfer Partners said it has suffered losses in the millions to vandalized equipment along the pipeline route in North Dakota. The company said it was taking steps to protect the pipeline from vandalism, but declined to disclose the details. The rally set for today at such places as state Army Corps offices, federal buildings, and offices of the banks that have helped finance the project are seeking to draw Obama's attention. The groups, including the Indigenous Environmental Network, Honor the Earth, and Greenpeace USA, want Obama to permanently halt the construction of the pipeline and focus the confrontations between police and protesters in North Dakota for months. A United Nations group that represents indigenous people around the world said the U.S. government appears to be ignoring the treaty rights and human rights of American Indians opposing the pipeline. The November 4 statement from the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues called on the government to protect the traditional lands and sacred sites of the Standing Rock Sioux and uphold the human rights commitments. Forum member Edward John, in late October, visited a camp in North Dakota that has drawn hundreds of protesters from around the globe. He said he found a war zone atmosphere, and that I felt as though I was in an armed conflict zone on foreign soil. Justice Department spokesman Wynne Horbuckle said the agency has been in communication with law officers, tribal officials, and protesters to facilitate communication, diffuse tensions, support peaceful protests, and maintain public safety. The next article is also Government and Politics. Women, Gay Man Considered for Key Administration Slots. This is from Washington, written by Steve Peoples and Julie Pace in Washington. His nascent administration already under attack, President-elect Donald Trump was considering Monday whether to inject new diversity into the GOP by recommending a woman to lead the Republican Party and an openly gay man to represent the United States at the United Nations. The moves, among dozens under consideration for his transition team, follow an intense and extended backlash from Trump's decision on Sunday to appoint Steve Bannon, a man celebrated by the white nationalist movement, to serve as the chief strategist and senior advisor. After winning the presidency but losing the popular vote, President-elect Trump must try to bring Americans together, not continue to fan the flames of division and bigotry, said House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi. She called Bannon's appointment an alarming signal that Trump remains committed to the hateful and divisive vision that defined his campaign. His inauguration, just 66 days away, however, Trump's team brushed off the criticism Monday and looked toward the hundreds of high-level appointments needed to run the world's most powerful nation. The president-elect was considering tapping Richard Grenell as U.S. ambassador to the United States. If picked, and ultimately confirmed by the Senate, he would be the first openly gay person to fill a cabinet-level foreign policy post. Grenell previously served as U.S. spokesman at the U.N. under President George W. Bush's administration. At the same time, Trump is weighing whether to select Michigan GOP chairwoman Rona Romney McDaniel, a niece of Trump critic, and 2012 presidential nominee Mitt Romney. She would be the first woman in decades to run the Republican National Committee. "I'll be interested in whatever Mr. Trump wants," McDaniel said Monday, adding that she was planning to seek the Michigan GOP chairmanship again. Appointing McDaniel to run the GOP's political arm would be an effort to help the party heal the anger after a campaign in which Trump demeaned women. The appointment of Grenell could begin to ease concerns by the gay community about Vice President-elect Mike Pence's position on same-sex marriage during his time as Indiana governor. The personnel moves under consideration were confirmed by people with direct knowledge of Trump's thinking, who were not authorized to publicly disclose private discussions. They stressed that the decisions were not final. Internal deliberations about staffing come a day after Trump made overtures to wearing Republican circles by appointing Bannon and RNC chairman Reince Priebus as his White House chief of staff. The two men had made up the president-elect's chief of staff shortlist, and while Priebus received that job, Bannon is expected to wield significant clout. Trump gave top billing to the former media executive who led a website that appealed to the so-called alt-right, a movement often associated with efforts on the far right to preserve white identity, oppose multiculturalism, and defend Western values. Priebus on Monday defended the media mogul, saying the two made an effective pair as they steered Trump past Democrat Hillary Clinton and toward the presidency. He sought to distance Bannon from the incendiary headlines on his website, saying they were written by unspecified others. "Together, we've been able to manage a lot of decision-making in regard to the campaign," Priebus told NBC's Today. "It worked very, very well." Trump's hires were, at first glance, contradictory, though they fit a pattern of celebrity businessmen creating a veritable Rorschach test that allows his supporters to see what they wanted. Priebus, who lashed the RNC to Trump this summer, despite some intra-party objections, is a GOP operative with deep expertise of the Washington establishment that Trump has vowed to shake up. He has close ties with House Speaker Paul Ryan, a fellow Wisconsinite. Bannon, meanwhile, helped transform the Breitbart News site into leading mouthpiece of the party's anti-establishment wing, which helped fuel the businessman's political rise. Ryan has been one of the most frequent targets. Neither Priebus nor Bannon brings policy experience to the White House. Chiefs of staff, in particular, play a significant role in policymaking, serving as a liaison to cabinet agencies and deciding what information makes it to the president's desk. They're often one of the last people in the room with the president as he makes major decisions. In announcing the appointments, Trump said Priebus and Bannon would work as equal partners, effectively creating two power centers in the West Wing. The arrangement is risky and could leave ambiguity over who makes final decisions. Trump has long encouraged rivalries, both in business and in his presidential campaign. He cycled through three campaign managers during his White House run, creating a web of competing alliances among staffers. Next article, Third Graders Hunt Bargains to Help the Needy, Indicator by Valerie Wells. Harris School third graders are learning about helping others. The Community Impact Project, spearheaded by teachers Taylor LaFrance and Cindy Ventress, is a way for kids to give back. The teachers ask the students to research the needs in the community and choose an organization to assist. The kids selected Northeast Community Fund. We challenged our students to look up different organizations in our community because third grade is a big year for learning about community as a whole, a friend said. The students voted on which organization to help and wrote persuasive papers from which they made iMovies for the school's Facebook page. Northeast Community Fund director Jerry Pels has visited the class to talk to the students about the people they help and gave the students a list of regular needs. Thanks to the students' fundraising efforts and grants from the Illinois Education Association SCORE program and the Decatur Public Schools Foundation, the children and teachers went shopping at Walmart. LaFrance was particularly proud of what good bargain hunters the students were. With $80 to spend per group, the kids found hand warmers in multi-packs that were less expensive than buying them singly, and so they could buy more of them for less money. Other groups purchased fruits and vegetables, tea lights, toothpaste and toothbrushes, chapstick, granola bars, and washcloths. They kept track of their purchases, and with a total of $665 to spend, came in under the wire at $664.21. They'll receive the IEA grant in a couple of months and will go back to buy more items for Northeast Fund then. Then we will deliver the items to the Northeast Community Fund, Ventress said. And that in itself was a lesson for the children to see exactly where their donations were going. All the schools in Decatur have a high poverty rate, LaFrance said, and the students were helping other kids in need as well as doing something to improve their community. The kids were wonderful, Ventress said. You'd think that 38 kids in Walmart would be chaos, LaFrance said with a laugh, but they were marvelous. They wanted to push the cart, they wanted to do the searching for the items, and they were looking for good deals. The next article, LSA students pass their blessings on to others, from Decatur, written by Valerie Wells. Last year, when Lutheran School Association students collected Christmas presents for foster children, they received an unexpected generous donation at the last minute that allowed them to include 20 extra kids. This year, the same person who asked to be anonymous dropped off a check for $1,500 on the very first day of collection. We pulled 40 names this year because we knew we could afford to do that many no matter what, said Allison Hicklin Nolan, the interim high school principal and counselor. We don't want to bring their items, She said it's likely the school will be able to take an additional 20 names again this year. Nolan said that some people forget to bring their items Monday, and she expects even more donations today. Share the Gifts is the LSA's annual Christmas outreach to children who are served by the Lutheran Child and Family Services. Each child provides a wish list, and the foster parents write one for the babies and toddlers. The students bring in donations and toys and clothes every week, and the LSA families and supporters donate cash as well. Then students sort the donated items and compare them to the wish lists before going shopping at Walmart to buy items that weren't donated. Sometimes, Nolan said, the foster children have big items on their list. Last year, some kids asked for bicycles and video game consoles. With a budget of $100 per child, without the extra donations, they wouldn't have been able to fulfill those wishes. Lists are posted in the office and in the hallways, and Nolan posted information on the school's Facebook page. AJ Massey brought in a warm outfit. We want to help the kids in need who need stuff they don't have, because some kids in life are more fortunate than others, the sixth grader said. It's getting to be winter time, and they need more clothes to stay warm so they don't freeze. Student leadership members are coordinating the collection of items, and for every donation, students get a rubber stamp on their hands, good for not wearing their uniform that day. That's a motivator, but not the only one. Jonah Nolan and Ann Casebeer, both sixth grade members of that organization, helped hand out rubber stamps on Monday, which filled a shopping cart to overflowing. Some high school students will be able to attend the foster children's Christmas party as volunteers, and while they won't be able to find out which children receive presents due to confidentiality, they'll be able to see who benefits. This is Jared Gregory's third year on the project. He's a junior at LSA High School this year. We've been blessed, and it's good to pass the blessings on to others, he said. Okay, and here are a few briefs for Tuesday. Decatur, thrown rock damage. A man throwing rocks at the Decatur Hotel and vehicles in its parking lot caused damage estimated to more than $500 early Monday, according to police. Written reports said the incident happened around midnight at the Hawthorne Suites by Wyndham at 2370 South Mount Zion Road. Some of the rocks smashed the windshield and dented the roof of a pickup truck belonging to the Norfolk Southern Railroad. It's estimated the windshield alone will cost $500 to replace. Other rocks hit the hotel, but the police reports did not list any damage. Officers say a man about 35 years old and wearing a camouflage jacket fled when they arrived on the scene. And a bicyclist was injured. A man who fell off his bicycle while cycling on Sunday evening suffered severe head injuries and was airlifted to the hospital, according to a written police report. The 44-year-old cyclist had been found lying unconscious in the 900 block of East Condit Street at 5:50 p.m. He was initially taken to the Decatur Memorial Hospital before being transferred to Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Police say doctors told them he was bleeding in his brain, facial fractures, and lacerations to his elbow. The cyclist later told police he could not remember how the accident had happened. And there'll be an empty chili bowl in Decatur. The empty chili bowl fundraiser will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 18th at Millikan University's Lower Richards Retreat University Center. Proceeds will benefit Good Samaritan Inn. Chili bowls are made by Millikan students. The cost is $10 per person, including chili, regular or vegetarian, a drink, or a dessert. For more information, you can contact Jim Scheitlinger, phone number 217-420-6639. That's the end of part one. I'll be right back with part two. Thanks for listening.